Hello, and welcome back to the second episode of our three-part series on CD38-directed strategies in the treatment of multiple myeloma. My name is Dr. Joshua Richter. I'm an associate professor of medicine at the Tisch Cancer Institute, Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, and the director of myeloma at the Blavatnik Family Chelsea Medical Center at Mount Sinai. I am joined by the esteemed Dr. Yi. Sir, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Josh, for starting the introduction. So I'm Andrew Yi. I focus on multiple myeloma. We're on the at Massachusetts General Hospital, where I'm the clinical director, and I'm an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard. Thank you, Josh. Looking forward to talking more about CD38.
Oh, I'm sure it'll get fighting words right back in there. So for those of you who already tuned into our first episode where we talked about CD38, directed strategies in the newly diagnosed patients. Here today, we're going to be talking about the evolving role of anti-CD38 strategies in the relapse refractory setting of myeloma. If you missed the last one, don't worry, you can find it in our series playlist. So today, we're really going to look at relapse, and a lot of this is going to focus on the early relapse setting. And in myeloma, we talk about early relapse being 1 to 3 prior lines of therapy. And much of anti-CD38 therapy has become a mainstay of our induction strategies, it really has become a key component of our early relapse and refractory strategies. So, Andrew, we'll throw it to you. Tell me about what you think of and how you approach early relapse myeloma patients, specifically around anti-CD38-based strategies.
Right. So, you know, if you had listened to our first podcast, we talked about how amazing these regimens are and how, you know, myeloma therapies have evolved dramatically. However, the reality also is that patients do relapse, right? But fortunately, you know, when patients do relapse, we have great therapies and combinations for patients who relapse. And, you know, some of the principles I think about when I think about relapse disease, you know, it's just basic oncology 101. We think about relapse, you know, disease. I think about, you know, the patient's performance status, comorbidities, you know, what treatment did the patient have previously, patient's, you know, wishes. I mean, it's a standard oncology, you know, 101. And with myeloma, I think myeloma is a little bit different in the sense that there's this idea of the type of relapse. And we have to think about, you know, is the patient, you know, there's this idea of having like a biochemical relapse versus a clinical relapse. And the thing with myeloma is that once patients have started therapy, usually they're being monitored more frequently. And when you're being monitored more frequently, you're more prone to detect rises in monoclonal protein or light chain, and hence the biochemical relapse. So one thing is a distinction between, you know, a biochemical relapse where the patient is generally doesn't have symptoms, but the clinician detects a rise in one of the myeloma-related markers versus a clinical relapse where, you know, a patient develops a new bone lesion that has a symptom, or the patient develops a new anemia, or patient develops renal dysfunction. So both of those are different scenarios. And for me, that kind of influences kind of how I think about the treatment. And the other related to this too would be, you know, should you wait for a patient to have a clinical relapse, right? You know, if you have a biochemical relapse, maybe you can just, the patient has no symptoms. Should you just wait till the patient has a clinical relapse? And when I'm thinking about this further, you know, this is sort of based on the retrospective data from the Mayo Clinic. And they looked at patients they looked at patterns of relapse after stem cell transplant. And they looked at patients who were treated biochemical relapse versus clinical relapse. And they found that the patients who were treated biochemical relapse tended to do better. Now, the obvious question would be, well, of course, you know, you're treating, you know, the patients who had biochemical relapse have better biology. And that's why they did better, right? They're all going to be low stage disease. But it turns out that when you actually looked into the details, the ISS staging, the FISH, they're actually pretty similar between the biochemical and the clinical relapse. And yet the patients who are treated biochemical relapse tended to do better. So then, thinking about, you know, I think about the myeloma and how much has changed so much, right? And how we're using, you know, CD30 antibodies so much for as part of our initial diet. If you had listened to our first podcast, you know, you'd be probably thinking about using CD30 antibody up front. But, you know, we do have patients for sure who are CD30 antibody naive. So I think for the purposes of this 1-3 prior lines, let's just focus on the discussion on a patient who is CD30 not antibody naive. Of course, I could throw a monkey wrench in this whole discussion and talk about like CARTITUDE 4 and CAR T, but we won't do that.
It's sensitive because I think you bring up a great point, because if you look at the NCCN guidelines for early relapse, the first page says bortezomib refractory or lenalidomide refractory. They don't have a section on CD38 refractory because right now that's still the minority of patients in the US. So I think, you know, as we talked about up front, where newly diagnosed are transplant or not transplant, most patients in the US kind of all filter down to Revlimid. You either get DRD or VRD up front, and a lot of people continue on Revlimid until relapse, or you get VRD or Dara VRD transplant, and then Revlimid maintenance. And I think a lot of people enter either, as you said, CD38 naive, or some, they responded and didn't progress on it, CD38 sensitive. So I think that's a great jumping off point. So we have someone who a CD38 could still be an option. How do you approach and does it differ between biochemical or a clinical relapse?
Right. So yeah, so for the purpose of the framing discussion, let's just take the stereotypical, you know, they had RVD plus mice transplant and on Rev maintenance. So you have a patient on Rev maintenance. So, and again, I think about the patient in front of you, is it a biochemical relapse or is it a clinical relapse? So I think for, you know, if the patient hasn't had, as a starting point, if a patient hasn't had a CD38 antibody, generally speaking, now is a good time to think about using that CD38 antibody, right? I mean, this idea, because again, it's one of the best therapies we have. Mm-hmm. And you know, now is the opportunity to use it if the patient hasn't had it already, you know, outside of the clinical trial. So then I think about using the CD38 antibody. And then the next question becomes, you know, what's your partner drug? And, you know, we've had multiple trials to help think about the partners to choose. And it's not like a marriage where you're looking for a partner or something, or like you're going to some
dance. No, I think about it like it's a dance partner. No, it's
maybe the analogy isn't that far off, but
yeah. But myeloma drugs don't follow the Billy Idol principle of dancing with myself. They want to follow the Whitney's. I want to dance with somebody, and that's what we have to say. And who's the dance partner?
I want to dance with somebody, right? Who's that saying? And we'll come to us at the end, Chuck. Sure. I want to dance.
All right.
So CD30 antibody, and then I typically think of the partner drug, because again, I think in general these combinations work better. So we can think of either partnering with like pomalidomide, or you could partner with like carfilzomib. So I think about there are four, you know, types of trial. There are four trials. And then some of them are daratumumab, and some of them are isatuximab, and some of them are pomalidomide, and some of them are carfilzomib. Mm-hmm. Well, just to keep it simple, I think for patients who have a clinical relapse, I think a lot about the MM014B study, which was daratumumab, pomalidomide, and dexamethasone. And that looked at, you know, lenalidomide, I think, refractory patients. And I think about that because, again, the patient on lenalidomide maintenance, this is a patient. Yeah, they've been through a lot with their initial therapy. Maybe they had a and now they're just on len maintenance, and they're having a great quality of life. They're kind of back to the routine, and then you tell them, "Oh, I think you have relapsing disease." And then meanwhile, the patient is just on Revlimid maintenance. And I think for a biochemical relapse, I think the CD30 antibody plus a pomalidomide dex is a great regimen for a biochemical relapse because it has the schedule and also just the side effect profile, right? Because so for me, I tend to lean towards that regimen. But for a patient that has like a clinical relapse where, you know, maybe they have a new lytic bone lesion, sometimes the carfilzomib based regimen can be more effective. A couple other points to think about would be, you know, there's this idea of, you know, if you have lenalidomide and you know, if you're progressing on an IMID, would an IMID still work? But I think, you know, pomalidomide definitely works in patients for lenalidomide refractory based on a couple, you know, based on like the optimism study, and there definitely is activity.
But even was studied in another, so MMCC404704 study specifically looked at len refractory going to Darapom. So yes, exactly. Completely agree. Yeah.
Yes. And they chilled like a PFS of about 2 years.
Really?
And right. So, and, but you know, Josh, if you were to put me to like, if you were to put me to a wrestling mat and say, compare Carl Phelps with the pomalidomide, right? Obviously I know you would win, but I mean, I think, but I think obviously there's not going to be a head to head trial of Carl Phelps versus, we're just not going to, that will never happen. But I think I'll acknowledge that, you know, carfilzomib versus, I think the carfilzomib regimens probably have more juice to it than palm. If they had a head-to-head CD30 carfilzomib versus CD38 palm, I think the CD30 carfilzomib would probably beat out CD38 palm. And that's, you know, just extrapolating from, like, you know, there are a couple of studies like Candor and Ikema. And, you know, initially with Candor and Ikema, I think about 50% of the patients were lenalidomide naive or something. But then if you looked at the lenalidomide refractory patients, of those two carfilzomib studies, I think they still showed significant benefit. And, but again, I think for the patient who has a clinical relapse where you kind of need something that has a little bit more juice to it, I think I would lean towards a CD30 antibody plus a carfilzomib-based regimen.
Absolutely. So I would completely agree. So if you look at the treatment patterns in the U.S., and there's so many options in the relapse setting, the number one prescribed regimen in early relapse is going to be Darapalm. It takes up about 10 to 12% of first relapse. So
it doesn't sound like a lot, 10 to 12%, Josh.
Yeah, well, but if you think about it, there are literally dozens and dozens of options, but actually rises up pretty high. I think we have to draw from, both the Aquelius study and from Acaria looking at either Darapalm or Isapalm. And I agree, for patients who, you know, I always separate what you call them clinical and biochemical relapse. I tell patients it's the I tell you or you tell me version.
Yes.
Tell you is you come in, you feel fine, and yep, your M spikes up, we need to switch, or you have new bone pain or some problem and you come in feeling horrible and you're telling me. So I completely agree. For convenience sake, and the fact that you can spread out the doses, I give a CD38 with POM for the more kindler, gentler stuff. And you mentioned PFS ranges around 2 years, but then we start getting, and again, difficult to compare trial to trial, but we start getting to the Candor and Ikema world. So Dara plus Kyprolis and Isa plus Kyprolis. And I couldn't agree more. For that patient you really worry about, and for two reasons worry about. One is what you talked about, the clinical relapse. Because obviously those patients with big time renal failure or bone lesions, I tend to be more aggressive, but also the functionally high risk. So yes, you can go from IMID to IMID, but if you are on rev maintenance for 5 years, I have no problem going on to POM. But if you are on rev maintenance for 6 to 12 months, I'm pushing quicker to those other regimens. And when we look at Candor and Ikema, we're getting PFS rates that go from around 30 months to pretty much around 40-month median progression-free survival in Ikema, which rivals some of the outcomes that we're seeing in some of the early CAR-T studies. So,
right.
You know, and of note, those CAR-T that were compared head-to-head with CD38-based therapies did not include CD38 plus carfilzomib for exactly your point. And I love the term, I'm going to steal it. It has more juice.
Right. No, exactly. And again, I think the timing of the relapse is key, right? Because if somebody has been on len maintenance for 5 years, it's not necessarily going to be high risk. Whereas if you progress within like a year on maintenance, that does feel high risk. And I think a couple of things too, from a practical standpoint, would be, in the pomalidomide in Apollo and Icaria, for example, there is a pretty high rate of neutropenia with pomalidomide at 4 milligrams. And so I think you have to be generous with the use of GCSF, you know, to use. And sometimes I do think about maybe a lower dose of pomalidomide, not necessarily 4 milligrams, I think 3 milligrams. Some people do 2 milligrams, but I think the milligram dose. Yes.
Are you a go low and then raise it up, or are you max dose and then back off kind of guy?
I kind of split the difference and started 3, actually.
I used to be a 4 and I started reducing so much. I agree. I do a lot of 3. And I see a lot of my colleagues even doing 2 for exactly the reasons you talked about.
Yeah. So I think the 3 milligrams is probably easier. And then, you know, with the carfilzomib, I think just, you know, in the studies that you know, Josh, you mentioned with Ikema and Candor, you know, they used twice a week carfilzomib, but in clinical practice, I think once a week is the way to go. And I know Josh, are you a 70 megs per meter squared with CD30? Are you more of a 56 megs per meter squared weekly?
So first of all, I completely agree. It's once a week. And I have to admit that I'm not so bold as a 70 once a week, as we saw in some of the champion and older trials. I'm a 56 per meter squared once a week. How about you?
No, I do 56 megs per meter squared. Exactly. And, no. You know, and the trials, they, you know, it's like twice a week, and it's like weeks 1, 2, 3 out of 4. But I think once patients have a response, I'm pretty quick to change it to every other week, for example, the carfilzomib. So
absolutely. So that's another great point, is that, you know, I think as we think about induction and maintenance in the upfront setting very readily, and the point you just made is something that I think is not always thought about in the relapse setting, but I do exactly what you do. So I start them off at days 1, 8, and 15 weekly. And we get 4 to 6 months down the road, I go to an every other week. So if you're mixing it with Dara, you get Dara and Kyprolis this week, Kyprolis 2 weeks later. For isatuximab, it actually dovetails nicely, because then in the maintenance setting, both drugs are giving every other week.
Yeah. No, I think just because I think it just, you know, like how we, I just emphasize how we practice doesn't really reflect what's published in the clinical trials, right? So when you hear about these trials, I think what's missing is how does Dr. Richter actually do it in Chelsea, right? In Chelsea, where you're like, how does he actually do it? And I think it can be eye-opening. It's just different. It's, and I don't know if that's true. No, because, you know, we just do myeloma, right? I don't know how it works in the other disease types. You know, there's this much separation between what's published and actual clinical practice.
All right. So we've talked about the CD38 plus Kyprolis and the CD38 plus pomalidomide. Andrew, are there any other secret hidden pathways of using CD38s with other, either by itself or with other drugs to combine, other dance partners?
Other dance partner, yes. So, yeah, something, and I think an emerging thing would also be, you know, translocation 1114. So I think when I think about relapsed disease, I think increasingly, you know, knowledge of whether or not the patient has translocation for the disease is important, because you think about, you know, BCL2 inhibition specifically with venetoclax. And, you know, I know that the CANOVA data that was presented in Greece was interpreted as a negative study, but again, there were some complicated factors with how you interpret, you know, IMWG response, et cetera. And I think in clinical practice, I think Josh, you could speak to this too. And for patients with disease of translocation 1114, you know, venetoclax can work amazing. And so if a patient has translocation 1114 and has not seen a CD30 antibody, you know, there's data with, say, daratumumab and using venetoclax, and that can work really quite well. I think secret, right? What's this? As the dosing, I think about venetoclax, maybe say 400 milligrams, not like 800 milligrams as has been presented. Again, a lot of this is the dosing. And then, you know, we've talked a lot about these triplet combinations, and I know we've been emphasized, you got to do these big combinations, but, you know, there is the occasional patient where sometimes, you know, the daratumumab or CD3M as a single agent can really work quite well. But the problem is you don't really know ahead of time, you know, who those patients are going to be, that, you know, where it just works exceptionally well. It just is a single agent.
Agreed completely. I have two other areas where two other combos, if you will. One of them is there's been emerging data about CD38 and selinexor. And interestingly enough, I mean, this has been studied in the STOMP trial, but there's been some genomic work recently showing non-overlapping genomic subcohorts where the type of disease that tends to be refractory to Celi is more sensitive to Dara or Isa and vice versa. So it turns out that CD38 takes about 4 to 6 months to repopulate on the cell surface. And with daratumumab moving, you know, into early lines, if I have someone that says, say, let's get Dara early on and it gets carfilzomib, pomalidomide, dex in the next line, and then 4 to 6 months later or beyond relapses, I've been using a fair amount of isatuximab along with selinexor in the clinic, you know, both to reintroduce the CD38 and the synergy with selinexor. The other area that I've had some success with is the combination of CD38 monoclonals and oral cyclophosphamide. And this comes in some of the older patients where maybe single agent Dara isn't quite getting them there and they have issues either tolerating or affording IMiDs. And, you know, carfilzomib or bortezomib can have their own toxicity. So I think there's a lot of ways around it. And I actually have had some good outcomes from getting immunogenic cell death with oral cyclophosphamide and combining with the CD38 monoclonal antibody, either Dara or Isa. So I agree. I think CD38s between our discussion this time and our last podcast are really coming out to be Swiss Army knife of myeloma therapies.
Right. I was thinking about it can partner with anybody pretty much. It's a flexible partner. And, you know, I think about the cycle. I think about, the partners like cyclophosphamide. There's also the Canadian study that looked at daratumumab with cyclophosphamide and pomalidomide. So, I think maybe a takeaway is that I can't really think of a specific situation where you couldn't use a CD38 antibody, actually. I mean, there are always different permutations that have been studied. With very few exceptions, I don't think there's any limitation to how you can combine the CD30 antibody.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only area that it's not that we can't, but you have to proceed with a little extra care is that there's a lot of CD38 expression in the pulmonary vasculature. So actually, more so in the package insert for daratumumab than isatuximab, though it applies to both patients with severe reactive airway disease. I don't know how you approach it. I'd love to hear. I actually give them Singulair for at least 3 days prior to the first dose to prevent any untoward bronchospasm or reactive airway events. I don't know if you have any tips or tricks for the really bad COPDers.
Actually with the sub-Q, and then we do use Singulair as part of the prophylactic regimen. I haven't been giving them as like a pre-phase, so to speak, but on the day of treatment, they do get Singulair. I just haven't seen any issues with patients with reactive airway disease. And also, as a side note, what's the observation period after the CD3 antibody? And, you know, we used to watch them for like 4 hours after like sub-Q DAR, and then we realized nothing was happening. So now we've kind of shortened, our practice. We, for the very first dose, they're watched for 30 minutes and then they're discharged. So I think that just really emphasizes it's just a great dance partner for almost any drug.
Absolutely. So as you and I continue to dance our way towards the end of this podcast, just like the last one, you go into the office of a hematologist oncologist, you have 2 minutes with them in between patient number 35 and 36 for the day. You want to talk to them about the role of CD38 in relapse refractory. Can you give us a couple of bullet points that you would absolutely hammer home?
Right. I think the key is that if the patient hasn't seen a 30 CD38 antibody, now that's the time to use it. And again, I think about some of the key combinations and the stereotypical patients, the lenalidomide maintenance patient. I think about clinical relapse versus biochemical. If it's a biochemical relapse, I tend to think about pomalidomide. If it's more of a clinical, I tend to think about carfilzomib and also the dosing of the carfilzomib and the pomalidomide. I think lower dose, translates into better tolerability and patients able to stay on it longer.
Couldn't agree more. Pomalidomide dose, absolutely key to the success of that regimen. You brought up earlier that this is not classical chemo, so judicious use of myeloid growth factors is needed. I would also say prior to a Kyprolis-based regimen, I like to get a baseline echocardiogram, although I completely agree with you that the majority of patients don't have any issues. It's always nice to know where you start, because if you haven't done an echo in a while and they get a little short of breath, you want to know what's really going on. Because I've had a couple of patients with non-cardiac dyspnea that actually for Kyprolis, we just give them more Singulair. I think it goes pretty well. But agreed, CD38 loves to dance with everything. And if you haven't used an early relapse, it's time to bring in that dance partner with its fancy shoes.
Right. Exactly.
That'll take us to the end of this podcast. We'd really like to thank you for joining us today as we evaluate some of our options in the relapse and refractory setting using CD38 monoclonal antibodies. Looking forward to our next podcast where we're going to be talking about future directions in clinical trials and some of the cutting edge approaches of what to look for in the next 5-10 years and beyond. If you have any questions concerning any of the information that's been presented today, you can simply scan the QR code on the screen and submit your questions. All questions will be answered in a series of e-newsletters following the release of this podcast series, and make sure you claim your credit. Please complete the continuing education evaluation to make sure you get that credit, and be sure to download the reference resource associated with this podcast. And please don't forget to either check out the podcast before or after this one. And on behalf of myself and Dr. Andrew Yi, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us on this series of understanding the role of CD38 targeting agents in multiple myeloma. Thank you.